Micah John, and you're at Eureka Street Crypto, broadcasting live from Leander, Texas. It is 5:38 in the morning on a Tuesday, January 25th, and this is episode number 397, getting close to that 400 mark. I don't think I'm going to be doing this every single day anymore, because work is just like stacked up, both with my in real life job and with, crypto work, DAO work, podcasting work, all types of stuff, which is good. This is my goal. This is why I wanted to start this channel anyway, which was to learn how to do this video streaming, learn how to do podcasting, learn how to hone my skills in a safe place like this, where I could just kind of make mistakes, jumble things around, learn how to be on camera, learn how to talk about crypto, as much as I do. Just kind of make mistakes and do things as I go along without being paid for it, without sponsorship expectations or anything like that. So this is just my morning video blog, AKA brain dump. And, it's not financial advice. It's not technical analysis. It's not fundamental analysis. It's not a teaching series or anything like that. I'm not trying to teach you crypto. I'm just brain dumping stuff that I'm learning about crypto as I go along here. And just learning how to do podcasting, video streaming, and stuff like that. So yeah, take it for what it is. So anyway, let's take a look at the old CoinGecko and see what we have here. See if we have any green. We do have green in the past 24 hours. So I figured at some point it might break away and give way to some green instead of just pure dumpy red. Blood flowing red on the highway. It's all it's been for like the past week. Whatever, man. It is what it is. You know, I really am in it for the tech. You know, like it's gonna dump, dude. You know, everybody's got to take a dump. If you don't take a dump, you're not human, and the markets are human. It's funny how it kind of goes along with the S&P and the NASDAQ and all that stuff. The Dow Jones. All that stuff's been down too. And it's funny because I've just, you watch all different types of videos on the internet and stuff like that. A lot of people are saying the lockdown stocks are down, which would be Amazon, Peloton, Netflix, things like that. And those are things that you do when you're locked down. And it just so happens that the UK, it has, reversed its stance on masks and on being locked down. And and who knows? And a lot of people in the United States are just absolutely completely disregarding it, which is, I think, a great thing. So the lockdown stocks, I mean, who knows, man? You know, like 250 something CEOs all resigned up to the December before the whole 2020 virus outbreak happened, you know? Like they know something. Those people know something that are and are privy to information that we do not get to know. You know, why did suddenly, an unprecedented amount of CEOs suddenly resign before, this whole announcement of a lockdown just a couple months later and the shutdown of an entire economy, including the CEO of the company I work for as well, also resigned. What do these people know that we don't get to know? And then now, suddenly all these stocks, are going in the toilet, these lockdown stocks, just as the UK is saying no to mandates and no to lockdowns and no to masks and all that stuff. So interesting coincidences, correlations, I don't know. It is what it is. So now that those stocks have been in the toilet, it's funny how the crypto market has also been dumped on. And a lot of people blamed it on Kazakhstan. And they say that the people in Kazakhstan were an uprising about fuel prices. Yeah, and no, you don't go burn down, medical facilities and government buildings and kidnap and arrest doctors and government officials over gas prices. I'm sorry, but there's been some really crappy action in the gas prices in the past. Nobody behaved that way. It was because of the forced mandates and them locking them out of their bank accounts and all types of stuff like that over there for, you know, the jab. And yeah, it just doesn't work, man. So anyway, that's not what this show is about. I just wanted to talk a little bit about all this weird price action and stuff. There's is so much manipulation, and supposedly crypto is not a regulated market. But there is tons of manipulation in there. And then other people say that BlackRock, you know, is starting to get into the whole game, you know, the Bitcoin game and stuff like that. And, BlackRock's going to do everything in their power, and they are powerful, to push down the price so they can buy as much as they're going to buy for the time being. And so who knows what type of sleight of hand is going on up there. That's above my pay grade. I just work here. I don't even work here. I volunteer here every morning to talk about this stuff because I find it interesting. So it is what it is. All right. So anyway, let's look at the prices. Bitcoin's up 7.5% in the past 24 hours, down 14% in the past 7 days. Yesterday, it was down 21%. So yeah, it's up 7.5% since yesterday, which makes sense. Ethereum 7.1 up 7.1% in the past 24 hours. We've got Tether and Binance Coin. Binance Coin is up 7.3%. USDC is stable coin. Cardano up 3.2%. Solana 9.1%. XRP 4.9%, Terra 4.6%, Polkadot 9.4%, all up in the past 24 hours. Polkadot's gone down 30% in the past 7 days, so that's taken a pretty bad hit. Ethereum down 25% in the past 7 days. A lot of this stuff has taken some pretty bad hits. Avalanche, volatile as always. Avalanche is a pretty volatile cryptocurrency. It's another layer one solution, trying to, I guess, compete with Ethereum. Even though it's EVM compatible, see, all these layer ones are becoming EVM compatible. And there was a Twitter post that I bookmarked, and let me go back to my Twitter feed here. Oh man, I'm gonna have to go back to my actual Twitter. I'll let that load. But someone was saying, and I thought it was an interesting opinion, that all other layer ones are eventually going to be roll-ups. Ethereum, they're all going to become Ethereum layer twos basically at some point. Interesting point, because Ethereum layer twos are trying to solve the scalability issue. All these other layer ones are sitting there poising themselves as potential alternatives to Ethereum's gas issues and scalability issues. Yes, and that's great and all, but they also are have a lot less validators, and they're not as decentralized and stuff like that, or they're running purely on VC money. That'd be interesting to see when that VC money runs out. Yeah, so I don't know. Here's a controversial opinion. Here's the bookmark. Within the next 12 months, several alt layer ones will realize how hard it is to maintain an economically secure validator set. Yeah, they will pivot to becoming roll-ups. And last Friday I sat there and I looked at several blockchains and I pointed out how many validators they all had. And I realized I didn't point out Ethereum. I mean, obviously I need to look at Ethereum. So, here's Bitcoin, Bitnodes. There's 12,699 nodes right now. Global Bitcoin nodes distribution right there. You can see it. That's how many computers are validating and transacting on the network and verifying transactions and all types of stuff, and mining to what's up, Fisher Blackwell and Russian person. Welcome back. I do recognize your name, even though I don't read Cyrillic alphabet. This 12,699 nodes currently active on the Bitcoin network. Ethereum, let's see how many there are. There are 2,315 nodes found. So it's a huge difference. the difference between nodes. You want more nodes to be more decentralized, you know, and to eliminate, you know, 51% attacks, vulnerability, to eliminate if what nodes go down, that, you know, the system will go down and stuff like that. You know, but all the nodes, in order to be able to completely verify a transaction, have to come into agreement as to the answer of a transaction. And the larger the network it is, the more it slows down and it becomes more difficult to scale. So that is what Ethereum has been dealing with, is the scalability issue and the gas issue as well. Because the more information you put on a block, the more expensive that transaction gets. And also the way Ethereum works and Bitcoin is there's a meme pool, which the transactions that are waiting to be done and verified are sitting in this lobby, basically, for lack of better words, and they're waiting for the nodes to validate it, for the miners to solve for it or whatever. And when you pay gas, you are paying for your place in that line. So there's an auction system that allows you to pay more gas in order to be bumped up to the front of the line. And that's where the high gas prices come from. So that is one of the scaling issues. So all these other layer ones have come about. They've had layer two solutions built on top of Ethereum as rollups and stuff like that. So that's the Bitcoin nodes, 12,699. Ethereum is at 2,315. Let's see where Avalanche is. Avalanche is sitting at 1,240 nodes. Solana is sitting at, let's see how many validators Solana has, if I can get this page to load up. It kind of lags when I stream, so it's hard to get things to load, so you'll have to excuse me. I can't remember right off the top of my head how. Okay, here it is, 1,440 nodes for Solana. And then let's see, Harmony. Let's see, they had 276 nodes. Okay, so that's not very many. And then I actually took a look at Tezos as well, and Tezos has quite a bit. Let's see, it's not on this page, it's on this page. So Tezos, 4,794 nodes. I was surprised. I like Tezos. You know, they have good NFT artwork. It's always kind of been this underdog of a blockchain, you know, and I'm always for the underdog. But anyway, public nodes, 371. So I'm not really sure what that means. And I'm not that familiar with Tezos. So, you know, you'll have to excuse me on that if I say something completely ignoramus. But that's the nodes that I was talking about. And I can't remember where I was going with this. So let me go back over here to this Twitter bookmark. Oh yeah, controversial opinion. Within the next 12 months, several alt ones, some of these others like Solana and, you know, Harmony, and, you know, think of like Phantom and stuff like that, and Cardano, and we'll realize how hard it is in Avalanche to maintain an economically secure validator set. It is hard to get random people to run your nodes and run them reliably, you know? So that's why you see a lot of VC money coming in and paying for a lot of nodes, but that basically centralizes it, you know? And then here's Chris Bleck. I love Chris Bleck. He's a controversial figure in the crypto space. One, because he does not support the jab or masks or anything like that. And he is outspoken about conferences that try to enforce that, which I support him on that. I mean, we're supposed to be decentralized and everything like that, and libertarian in a lot of ways, and about freedom, you know, yet somehow these conferences are sitting there mandate that people have to show proof of a jab, you know? But anyway, all that aside, he says, stop kidding yourself. The Ethereum based funds that you deposit on layer twos, like Arbitrum or side chains like Avalanche, are secured in just as centralized a fashion as those on a centralized exchange. So he also rails on other blockchains for having centralized tendencies, and he rails on the rollups. You know, he rails on Arbitrum and on Polygon for having only a small group of people, like maybe two or three people, like three people, right, on a multi-sig that control all those funds, which is like billions of dollars, you know. And That's kind of scary when you think about it, you know? So he brings up a lot of good points and he pisses a lot of people off and he ruffles a lot of feathers. But he says, yeah, stop kidding yourself. The Ethereum based funds that you deposit on layer twos like Arbitrum, and he calls Avalanche a side chain here. So I think this is meant to be a jab. So Avalanche is just another layer one blockchain. Are secured in just as centralized a fashion as those on a centralized exchange. And then this person, Captain Nemo, obviously supports Avalanche, says, nope, Avalanche is no sidechain to Ethereum, nor is it centralized. I don't think that he understood the jab. Well, maybe he did. It is a decentralized Ethereum virtual machine compatible blockchain with a novel consensus that aims to be much more. So a lot of these layer ones are making themselves compatible to Ethereum, not the other way around. But they're making themselves Ethereum virtual machine, EVM compatible. And you see this happen on Tezos. You see it happen on Zilliqa. You see it happen on Avalanche. You see it happen on Theta. I don't know about Tezos, actually. You see it happen on Harmony. You see a lot of these blockchains becoming EVM compatible, meaning that anybody that is any DApp, decentralized application that works on Ethereum, can also work on any blockchain that is EVM compatible. So they say Avalanche is not a sidechain to Ethereum, nor is it centralized. It is a decentralized EVM compatible blockchain with a novel consensus that aims to be much more. Okay. And then Chris responds saying fund security is based more on the bridge than on the network. So the bridge is kind of a centralized choking point in a lot of these blockchains. So interesting points. And then, let's see here. Somebody said, if I can get it to scroll up. Okay. It's not that bad. They don't want pics of my passport and address yet. And that's, you know, that's standard protocol for centralized exchanges. They want the picture of you holding your passport, you know, and stuff like that. And maybe you writing out your address on a piece of paper to prove that you are who you are. It'd be interesting, you know, like, they don't regulate layer twos in quite the same way. Cause like I've said this before, the amount of people, you know, that are the amount of money in the world is huge. You know, the amount of people that are into crypto is just a tiny little fraction of those people that hold money and gold and all that. And then the people that are into crypto that are into DeFi and decentralized finance is like a tiny little sliver of the amount of people that are into crypto. And then the people that are actually using layer two solutions is like a minute little speck of the people that are in the DeFi, of the people that are into crypto, of the people, you know, that are, that hold, have money, which, yeah. So, I mean, the amount of people, so they haven't quite gotten, I guess, regulations all the way down to layer two solutions and the whole idea of having to do KYC and stuff like that. I don't know. I don't know where they are on that, but it's interesting to think about. I'm not really sure where I was going with all this, but I did have something else I wanted to talk about. Ethereum 2.0. All right. I saw a tweet and I've been seeing them talk about this, and I hear Ryan and Sean on Bankless talk about it, and they say, well, it's not Ethereum 2.0 anymore. It's not what they want people to call it and everything like that. But there's really been nothing official declared, because a lot of people know that Ethereum is going to be moving from proof of work, where you mine, to proof of stake, you know, where you run validators. So instead of things going to be secured and validated by work and by running the algorithms on the computer, they'll be validated by somebody's economic stake, you know, to put up and put at risk in order to help secure a network. Okay, so there's an article here. Let me go back to my Twitter for a second. And I'll have to get into this tomorrow probably, but Phantom overtakes Binance Smart Chain and total value locked. I also wanted to look at Celestia.org as another layer two solution. But anyway, Ethereum.org says we've removed all uses of Ethereum 2 terminology on Ethereum.org. Interesting. Okay. So they are completely reshaping the language around Ethereum. And you hear, you know, Ryan and Sean on Bankless sit there and talk about monolithic versus modular blockchains. and that whole concept. And basically what that is like Tezos is a monolithic blockchain. Avalanche is a monolithic blockchain. Cardano is a monolithic blockchain. Ethereum, as it is now, is a monolithic blockchain. Harmony is a monolithic blockchain. You get it. Bitcoin's a monolithic blockchain. And what that means is that all the functions that happen, because whenever you do a blockchain transaction, there's a lot of things that go on. You know, there's execution, there's consensus, there's data storage, you know, there's all types of stuff that happen in a blockchain transaction. And all that right now is being done in one single spot during the transaction. So think about a computer, a CPU, the central processing unit of a computer. You know, back a few years ago, everything used to be done on one chip, and they went according to Moore's law. The more transistors you add the chip gets bigger, you know, and at some point Moore's law is going to fail because the chip can only get so big, right? Or like fold a piece of paper, you know, how many times can you fold a piece of paper before you can't fold that piece of paper anymore? And it kind of, you know, you're sitting there trying to like bend it every which way, but you just can't fold that piece of paper anymore. Yes, that's kind of what is happening to chips and transistors. That's what happened. And so what AMD did is they came around and they broke that chip up into a bunch of different pieces and functions. And they had one central router chip in the middle with all these other little side chips around it. You know, maybe four or five side chips around one central chip. And the central chip is a coordination chip. And then all the other chips took care of a lot of the different functions that happen within the CPU, you know, as a computer does its work, right? Okay, so the same thing is being talked about now with blockchains. You know, you have a lot of different functions and things that happen during a blockchain transaction. So what if you broke up that blockchain into different layers? Instead of having it all happen on one layer, you can have it happen on a bunch of different layers that communicate with each other. Yes, Ethereum is undergoing significant changes. So Ethereum was moving from proof of work to proof of stake, and people were saying, oh, well, that's just, you know, kind of like a software upgrade, Ethereum 1.0, and then there's Ethereum 2.0, and then they're going to basically merge the chains together, you know, and then, you know, Ethereum 1.0 will no longer exist, and Ethereum 2.0 is going to take over. Well, that's not really true. Ethereum 1.0, the execution layer is still going to be there. It's just going to be merged in with the consensus layer. So here's what they're saying. Ethereum is a protocol undergoing significant changes. Client teams are upgrading the protocol to scale to meet the global demand while improving security and decentralization. Beyond protocol development, a critical shift in Ethereum has been the movement away from Ethereum 1 and Ethereum 2 technology. Pardon me. As of late 2021, core developers stopped using the terminology, preferring execution layer and consensus layer, respectively. Those are two different functions of a blockchain, to execute something and to provide consensus. And then they didn't even mention data storage layer and stuff like that, which is, you know, what a lot of these side chains and rollups and things like that are taking care of. They're taking some of these other functions as well. I digress. So Ethereum layer 1 is the execution layer. Ethereum layer 2 is the consensus layer. Let's see how far I am. I'm 24 minutes in. Okay. The new Ethereum, which they're just calling Ethereum, is execution plus consensus layer. So they say, let's explore why. Okay. So the terms Ethereum 1 and Ethereum 2, Ethereum 2.0 are being phased out. Execution layer and consensus layer are the new terminologies. The roadmap to scale Ethereum in a decentralized way remains the same. You don't need to do anything. So you do not need to do anything. And I'll get to that here in a second. So Ethereum always had, as part of its roadmaps, plans to scale the network in a decentralized way and to transition to proof of stake. Early on, researchers worked on these efforts separately, but around 2018, they were combined into a single roadmap under the Ethereum 2.0 umbrella. As part of that roadmap, the existing proof of work chain at the Ethereum 1 would eventually be deprecated via the difficulty bomb. Users and applications would migrate to a new proof of stake Ethereum chain known as Ethereum 2. All right, so what changed? As work began on the Beacon chain, that's the proof of stake chain, it became clear that the phased Ethereum 2.0 roadmap would take several years to deliver fully. So it's going to take a long time to merge that in. This led to a revival of initiatives on the proof of work chain, such as stateless Ethereum, a paradigm that would remove the untouched state from the network bound to its growth rate. And I honestly am not smart enough to really commentate on that, the whole idea of the stateless chain. There's a lot of stuff I really got to work on and read into here. I'm not a professional on this. I'm reading the primer. I got to read all these articles in here. And I would suggest you too. I'm going to link this in the video description. But anyway, where I am is reading this. So the increased focus on making the proof of work chain long-term sustainable, paired with the realization that the Beacon chain would be ready much earlier than other components of the Ethereum 2.0 roadmap, led to an early merge, in quotes, proposal. This proposal would launch the existing EVM chain as shard zero of the Ethereum 2.0 system. Now, they were wanting to move to a sharding system, and that's another different type of scaling solution. So sharding and rollups are not the same. Sharding is very, very complex. And think about a database being broken into a lot of different shards, or say, for instance, you know, you have a horizontal database, and then you have your East Coast and West Coast customers, you know, and those transactions are being processed side by side. And then later on, we'll merge together at some point to become completed transactions and stuff like that. Ethereum is not going to be able to do sharding for quite a while because it's super complex. So they started focusing more on the rollups part of it for now. Okay, so this proposal would launch the existing EVM chain as shard zero of the Ethereum 2.0 system. Not only would this expedite the move to proof of stake, but it would also make for a much smoother transaction for applications, as the move to proof of stake could happen without any migration on their end. Okay. Shortly after this proposal, Danny Ryan explored how we could accomplish this by leveraging the existing ETH1 clients in his ETH1 plus ETH2 client relationship post. I need to read that. This would massively reduce the development work required to deliver a post-merge system and leverage existing clients, which had been battle-tested for years on mainnet. Around the same time, research on rollups as a viable and secure way to scale Ethereum proved promising. So they're sitting there talking about all the sharding stuff. They're realizing how complex it's going to be and how long it's going to take. But then at the same time, rollups, a lot of research was being done on that. So instead of waiting on a complex, uncertain scaling solution years away, we could shift the focus towards scaling via rollups instead of sharded execution. Okay, cool. All right. So why can't we just use ETH2? So they say mental models. One major problem with the ETH2, and branding is really important. It will shape how you think and how you act towards certain things. So one major problem with the ETH2 branding is that it creates a broken mental model for new users of Ethereum. They intuitively think that ETH1 comes first and ETH2 comes after, or that ETH1 ceases to exist once ETH2 exists. Neither of these is true. By removing ETH2 terminology, we save all future users from navigating this confusing mental model. All right, so they're trying to form how you think about this as a foundation. So, and then number two, inclusivity. As the roadmap for Ethereum has evolved, Ethereum 2.0 has become an inaccurate representation of Ethereum's roadmap. Being careful and accurate in our word choice allows content on Ethereum to be understood by the broadest audience possible. So, yeah, they want to eliminate potential bad mistakes. So they're starting it and nipping it in the bud right at the beginning. So scam prevention. Unfortunately, malicious actors have attempted to use ETH2 misnomer to scam users by telling them to swap ETH for ETH2 tokens, that they must somehow migrate their Ethereum before the ETH2 upgrade. So if you get any phishing emails or any Discord messages or Telegram messages, or you see any posts or websites or Twitter posts or anything like that that tells you that you have to migrate your Ethereum to ETH2 and that you need to, you know, click on this link or deposit into this address or whatever, ignore it or report it. Even better, report it as a scam, because it is a scam. You do not need to do jack squat. If you have Ethereum one, if you have Ethereum now, you don't have to do jack. Okay. You don't have to do anything, nothing. Okay, so if anybody tells you that you have to migrate your tokens or do anything, lift a finger to even click, nothing, you don't have to do anything. Okay. So it's a scam. Okay. So report it. So they said, we hope the updated terminology will bring clarity to eliminate the scam vector and help make the ecosystem safer. All right. And then there's staking clarity, another reason why they're eliminating ETH2, ETH1 language. Some staking operators have also represented ETH staked on the Beacon chain with the ETH2 ticker. So something might show up as Ethereum2. It's not correct. This creates potential confusion. Given that the users of these services are not actually receiving an ETH2 token, there's no ETH2 token. There's no such thing. There's Ethereum, ETH, that's it. Or ETH, depending on how you want to say it. But I just feel weird saying ETH. So I'll just say ETH. That's the way I like to say it. It simply represents their share in that provider's specific provider's stake. So if somebody represents and shows you, and you have Ethereum stake, and it shows it as ETH2, that is just your share in that specific staking provider's stake pool. All right. So that's it. That's all that represents. So how does this update change the Ethereum roadmap? It does not. It doesn't change anything. Nothing. It's important to understand that the renaming represents a change in naming only. The features on the current roadmap, the merge, the sharding, the feature updates, and all that will still happen on the same timeline. And here's the timeline right here. You can see it. If you're on the audio version, you know, I'm sorry you can't see it, but you get better audio quality for sure. Okay, so anyway, there's a proof of work, October 14th, the deposit contract deployed. We're still running on proof of work here. Then they, in August 4th, they had the London and EIP 15, London hard fork and EIP 1559 implemented. And then over here in December 1st, 2020, they had the Beacon Chain launch, and that allowed people to start staking up onto the proof of stake network. But those tokens are locked in up until an undefined date here in the future when the merge is complete. Then they had the Altair upgrade, and then in 2022, we're going to see the full merge of the proof of stake network coming in. Okay, so. And then data sharding should happen sometime late this year or early 2023. My best guess is probably 2023, honestly. But yeah. Anyway, a final note. To many, Ethereum.org is seen as a credible source of information maintained by our community, which is Ethereum.org is where the Ethereum Foundation is where most of the people that are working on Ethereum are part of the Ethereum Foundation and are part of Ethereum.org. So yeah, it's natural that they would probably be the most credible source of information because those are a lot of the people that are directly working on Ethereum. So understandably, many didn't want to shift away from the Ethereum 2 terminology until Ethereum.org did. So we hope that our changes will encourage others to move away from the outdated ETH2 terminology. By doing so, you will help to create consistency and clarity across the ecosystem, allowing for more accurate mental models and making Ethereum more accessible, which I think it's good. I mean, for a guy like me, you know, not the most sophisticated character around, I think the best reason for this is scam prevention, because there I can just see it now, you know, all these people out there sitting there just flooding my email and Telegram and Discord messages saying that I need to upgrade my Ethereum, you know, so watch out for that. All right, man. Well, that's today's show. I don't know if I'm going to broadcast tomorrow. I may actually go work out in the morning. I need to get back to that. I've been slacking on that. I took a head injury last November or something, and I haven't really been to the boxing gym since then. But I'm trying to get back into working out, and I need to. All right, so I don't know if I'll be going on tomorrow or not. That's